JM and the AM, good morning. Well, I've been mentioning on the air that it's a sad day. As much as we were having fun earlier, it is a sad day. We can only imagine what our brothers and sisters in Israel are going through. And I'm referring, of course, to this friendly fire episode. 5 soldiers killed, 7 wounded. You could add them to the terrible numbers that have added up to a tremendous price that the Jewish people have paid since October 7th. The numbers of those who've been killed by the enemy, the numbers of military exchanges that have resulted in killings of Israeli soldiers, and of course so many wounded, and obviously a friendly fire episode, which is so hard to digest. And we can only imagine what those families in Israel are going through as they go through the process of laying their children to rest after yesterday's episode. So I've been mentioning for a couple of weeks that Rabbi Menachem Bambach is going to be visiting us in studio here at JMM. He has had much to say about the responsibility, the civic responsibility of all parts of the Israeli society to the state, the responsibility that everybody has to the state and the responsibility that everybody has to each other, especially now during this time of war. Menachem Bambach is an entrepreneur, an educator, Rosh Yeshiva of the Boys Residential High School Hamidrasha HaChassidit in Beitar Elite. He's founder and CEO of the Netzach Yisrael Educational Network. He is a Vizhnitzer Chassid. He is sitting in front of me, doesn't exactly look like a Vizhnitzer Chassid, but he is, and he was born and raised in Meir Sharim. Following his education at the Mir, he earned an undergraduate degree. I'm sure that's a story in and of itself. And then he founded a mechina for Haredi students. In 2017, he established Netzach Yisrael, a network of Haredi schools whose mission is to provide its students with an outstanding Haredi education, while in parallel, they work toward Bagrut certificate, a prerequisite for quality employment and higher education in Israel. Rabbi Menachem Bambach, it is a pleasure to welcome you to JM in the AM.
Thank you so much.
You've had somewhat of a different road than some of the other people that you grew up with in Meir Sharim, I would assume.
Absolutely.
And just the fact that you actually got onto the road of formal education, forget for a moment what you're doing now with the students, move that a drop closer to you, forget what you're doing with the students, which is a story in and of itself, but just the fact that you yourself pursued higher education is pretty remarkable. What was your family reaction when you went on that road?
Some of my family, they were sure that I am like become a secular. They,
they were worried about you.
Absolutely. Some of my families, they will never visit my house because they have some fear. Maybe I'm going to influence their kids or their siblings. So I'm, it's a mission. And when I grew up in Meir Sharim, I didn't know nothing about Israel. Nothing. In those years, it was very isolated, autonomous-y.
You told me you didn't know Hebrew or English.
I didn't know Hebrew, sure.
Or English.
Yeah, or English, for sure. So in our schools, I studied in Dushinsky. You heard about Dushinsky's very extreme education system. And I remember the songs against Zionism. So I grew up in very in extreme neighborhood. But at the same time, I have to say, I have great memories. From great people I met and I remember in Meir Sharim. But to make the whole story show that since I was revealed to the Israeli society, I was fascinated. I said, wow, this is someone that I can't know. This is the stranger.
You need to know about it.
We have to know. Right. So I made my journey and I completed all the gaps. It was not easy and it was... it's in some ways it's painful. It's painful.
Well, I would imagine so. I'm always curious about the certain trivial aspects of people with your background. Where are you in your family? Are you the oldest? Are you the youngest?
I'm the second.
You're the second.
Yeah.
And I would assume that the oldest is a traditional Meir Sharim.
It's neat. Yeah. Meir Sharim in those days is absolutely different.
Right.
We also moved
even
to the family.
Even it is today.
Yeah. Yesterday I get some new information about how many Haredim has access to the internet. So the last few years it becomes it's growing every year, right. And the last measurement is 70% has access to the internet. Right. And if you ask me how many of them in Asharim, I'm telling you, some of them
closer to 100%.
Exactly.
It's interesting. Is that the reason that attitudes have changed somewhat? You know, when we look, let's be honest. You're here. You're in front of me. We can speak openly. Very often, we are distressed when people in Mea Shearim react a certain way to Israeli soldiers, right? A soldier who walks through that neighborhood, I don't know, are they at risk? Is it isolated episodes when things like that happen? And generally, 99% of the time, it's not a problem. And then, of course, the attitude toward people who are trying to enforce the law. When the police come into Mea Shearim, especially when it's about certain issues, things get very violent. It's a bad reaction. Now, is all that changing, would you say? Is all that different than it was when you were younger?
I'm not living anymore in Mea Shearim, so I'm not sure if I can speak in their names. Right. But I can say that now we know that we are 1,300,000 people in Israeli society. It's about 12% of Israeli, the all Israeli society. So,
our Haredim.
Our Haredim. And we are growing very fast. Each 16 years, we are doubling ourselves. Right. And we know that 10% of modern Haredim, and there's another 30% who considered as a pragmatic Haredim. I mean, Haredim, conservative Haredim with modern touch.
Right.
And the rest is the majority of silent. And then we have 10% is very extreme Haredi.
Right.
So if you grew up in Mea Shearim, one of the normal customs is you get up and you fight for something, you just ask your neighbor, this is about what? It's like it's a narrative. It's a way that people understand themselves and their mission. I'm not judgmental for them. I have a lot of compassion. I think one of my motivation to do what I'm doing is exactly this, to see young people have no future. They cannot finance themselves, and just fighting against. And this is not a Jewish way.
Right.
We all believe that Jewish is about tikkun olam and about making good for everyone.
Right.
And it's about to be united.
And to make good things, make it good for ourselves.
For ourselves,
I
exactly.
mean, in Jewish tradition, the more educated, the better, right? The more educated, the better. The more responsibility one has for themselves, the better, right? It's better to be self-sufficient than to depend on others, including the government, right? I mean, I know you and I agree on this, but it's just interesting to hear it from someone from your background. Where do the modern Hasidim or the modern Haredim live? If Mea Shearim has the 10% and others that you describe, what neighborhoods have the modern ones that you're talking about?
So, you know, the Hasidim are very conservative in terms of culture.
Right.
But in terms of ideological,
right.
And also, but I would say that more and more Haredim feels much more Israelis. They're much more identified with Israel, and they're looking for being a part of Israel. We can see many, many great signs that things happens, and mainly since October 7. But I can tell you that they live all over. But many you can find them in Petach Tikva, Bet Shemesh. Now we have many, many, many schools,
right.
Elementary schools, high schools, post high schools, also in Jerusalem. If you provide them a community and with good ideas and a feeling of belonging, you can get more and more. We can see we are growing very fast. I just started for 10 years ago with the first high school. And I got it 14 boys that only criteria that I have, if you are breathing, I didn't check any cognitive abilities, just to make it happen, to create a reality. And now we have 16 schools.
Where was the first school?
In Bitar Elit.
Not all 16 are there.
No. We're all over network. Israel. Yeah, we have in Beit Shemesh, Yerushalayim.
All under the name Netzach?
Yeah. Netzach is the network. Each school has their own name.
Right.
And we believe that once we can get 10% from the normal community, it's going to be a tipping point.
You were able to find 16 principals who agree with you?
Yes, absolutely.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but we need to train. It's a absolutely good question, because it's not easy.
Now, and the first one was founded 10 years ago?
Yeah, so 10 years ago.
If you would have tried it 20 years ago, would it have worked or not?
I'm not sure.
Our impression is that anybody in Israel who has taken upon themselves the mission of trying to combine serious Jewish education with serious secular education, they always had a roadblock they were not able to overcome. Is that gone now? Like, well, how would you address that?
You heard about Belz.
Yeah, Belz and Hasidim.
Belz and Hasidim. So Belz, you know the story, before the election.
Right.
The rabbis, you know, he has such a lot of followers, right, and he understand the how their community is going to look like if they're not going to take care about themselves.
Right.
So he started with idea to put also secular studies in his elementary
schools. How long ago was
this? Just recently. It was before the...
the most recent election?
Yeah, uh-huh. It was the election.
A couple of years ago.
It's, yeah.
I would think, no?
2 years ago.
Yeah, we said a couple of years
ago.
But
the Lithuanian party in Israel, because the Hasidim and the Lithuanian goes together,
right.
Yeah, the Lithuanian are very conservative in terms of ideological, right?
They didn't agree with it.
Yeah, so they said, if you are going to put your secular studies in the schools, we're not going to run together. And Netanyahu understood that if they are not going together, he can lose the election.
Right.
So he said for the Belz Rebbe, don't worry, we're going to provide for you, we'll provide everything what you need without asking you to right. put secular studies. And this is exactly what happened, but no one knows. I can share with you that he still has a great motivation to put secular studies inside his elementary schools, and now some foundations and philanthropies, together they made an effort to train teachers, and they're doing a great job, and it starts already. So if you ask me if it could happen for 15 years ago, no.
Right.
We are growing very fast. It's a huge community. You know, it's 7.2 children in each family. If you're Hasid,
wow.
If you're Sephardi, 5.2. And if you're Lithuanian, it's a 6.4, something like that. So this is the community is growing very, very fast. He takes care, and I think he's a visionary, and he's 76 years old. He understands for the next generation, if we're going to stay with the same practice, with the same way, it's gonna be a danger for themselves.
Rabbi Menachem Bambach is visiting us. Okay. You have been outspoken. We get this whole thing, and thank God you have had great success. These are high schools, right? The 16 are all high schools.
All kinds. Elementary school, high school, boys' school, girls' school.
No, but what I'm saying is it's a shock that it's not limited to elementary school, because even in this country, a lot of the Hasidic and Yeshivish neighborhoods and communities will tolerate secular studies in whatever serious form it is till eighth grade, and then after that they really drift away from it. You're saying your high schools are preparing students for the Bagrut. Those who are familiar with the Bagrut know that it's a serious exam, right? It's a serious exam. And then, of course, you yourself went to college and obtained some degrees. Obviously, you take all that very seriously. So all 16 of the 16 schools, those that are high schools, take both Jewish and secular studies very seriously.
Absolutely. We have great results. We have almost 100% of the full matriculation.
I'm just wondering if you have a lot of angry families. That's what I'm wondering. Although they're volunteering to send their students there, right?
I have a lot of I'd supporters. People right. love so much what we are doing.
Well, they're sending their students, and they're sending their children.
Their children, absolutely. Yeah. We have also now a very nice project, a preparing Mechina
right.
for Haredim to become physicians.
Wow.
And we have, it's the second class.
They literally go to medical school.
They're going to go to the medical school.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So things happen.
Okay, so now the biggest issue.
Yeah.
There's a responsibility, and you've been outspoken about this. There's a responsibility of Israeli citizens to go to the army. And the males are all drafted and have this responsibility. And, of course, we know the situation that I'm sure the majority of the Rebbes and the Rosh Yeshiva would not encourage that. That's the feeling we get even after October the 7th. Notwithstanding the tremendous cooperation that Israel has enjoyed, during this war. It's one of the benefits of this terrible war. We talk about the horrible price, including yesterday's episode, terrible price of war. But there are,
I know some of the soldiers. We, Betyakov, we are very close with the family. And
from what city?
He lives in Efrat. This is a grandfather lives in Efrat. Yossi Ben-Gal.
One of the victims of yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. I would went to the Levaya, but you know, I'm here. It's so sad.
It's interesting because on the news we just heard about the Beit Alamin in the Gush. I'm assuming they were referring to his Levaya, to his funeral. That's the decision, by the way. I remind our listeners, that's the decision that these families have to make. They have a choice of the military cemetery in their hometown or the military cemetery at Har Herzl. That's the choices that our brothers and sisters have to go through while we're sitting on this side of the world living in luxury. But that's a separate topic. So you have been outspoken that you're trying to encourage as many young men as possible to actually carry out their army responsibilities. Right? This is not a hybrid program. I should say it differently. It's what we now know as the traditional Haredi approach to the army for those who go to the army. Meaning, there are certain units that have been designated where they are, you know, in a crowd, in a culture of religious observance, right? I'm not going to say religious Zionism, but if you're in the army, I think we can use that term. But certainly religious observance. And I would guess that many of your students, when they finish high school, are going on that route. Am I right?
Yeah. Some of them, you know, everyone has his own decision. Right. But my education is to raise the solidarity toward our communities and in our schools. So we have a very nice percentage of our graduates who are in the army. I have right now more than 12 in Gaza for my graduates from my Hasidic school. And this is absolutely something that we need to encourage in the coming years. But at the same time, I have to tell you, since October 7, okay, you mentioned, in October 9, the spokesman in the army, Dani Agari, a very close friend of me, he said that 2,000 Haredim wants to volunteer the army. And I said, wow, I jumped and I said, it's history moment. This is exactly what we are waiting for. And I was so happy and excited. And I text him, I asked him, Danny, is that true? How do you know those numbers? It's crazy. So he said, you know, I'm a spokesman. I'm the spokesman, so I never say something that we didn't check.
Right.
And by the way, I understood that we need to encourage more Haredim. So I was involved together with the army. I ran by myself a campaign, Haredim LeYisrael. That was the name. It still exists. You can find
it. With the ultimate commitment of actually serving in the army.
Haredim LeYisrael.
Putting their life on the line.
But I meant about the second stage. I will explain. The second stage is the idea we took Haredim between 25 and 45. And you train them for 2 weeks and 3 weeks. And then you can, you can go to Hatzalah, right, and different kinds
utilize
of missions.
Utilize them for different tasks.
Right? Yeah, different tasks. And I thought this is the best way to normalize the uniform in our community. I, by myself, I was 70 days in the army since October 7.
7-0.
Yeah. And I want to tell you that we made a nice campaign. I raised money for this campaign. And we bring a lot of people. What? I realize the exchange rate is 20%. I mean, if you want 2,000 people, you have to get 10,000 because not everyone can be accepted for many, many reasons.
Yeah.
So, Baruch Hashem, until now, we have more than 1,000. It's going to be close to 1,000 people, Haredim, and all over in different areas, and more people. You know, everything is about the norm. If people... You see more of your friends and you know people in your community or in your neighborhood, people who are wearing uniform and they are very proud, it's going to influence the younger generation.
Right.
And this is exactly, we cannot change the Haredi world in one night. Culture is much more stronger than anything else.
So what is the reaction when they go home?
So since October 7, I have to say, unbelievable. People like it.
Their families support it.
Again, we are not speaking about measuring. It's not a part of the equation. We have to understand.
Right.
And if you ask me, because when you see one side becomes more open-minded, so in the same way, there is the extreme becomes much more extreme.
Right.
It's a reaction.
Right.
So this is not a part of our mission, and I think we don't need to focus anymore about them.
We need to go home to Beitar.
And also in Beitar, you cannot imagine how many Haredim now, since October 7, publicly and officially they wear the uniform and everybody respect.
If I walk into a shul Shabbos morning in Beitar, I will see soldiers.
there, you can see soldiers. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's absolutely changed. If you ask me, it's enough. If you the sanction that you have in the community, because if you are different and right. about shidduchim, all those right. crazy things, it still exists. And you know, I'd expect it's going to be much more people in this area. But at the same time, I have to share with you, because I spoke with so many people in the army, with the human resource, Yaniv Aso, and many, many people. Even in the army, they are not really ready to get all the Haredim. Right. And I would tell you, they have some fear of changing the culture. I explained them that if you make a real special units and you provide everything, what the chassid, even a mikveh, right? Everything, what I think no one can stay against. And this is exactly what we need to do, because all the Haredi units right now, it's not the real and the real Haredim. I mean, it's edges or dropouts.
I got it.
So this is something
rebels like you. But I'll tell you, the joke is, you know, but they always say, oh, you don't want the Haredim in the army. I get the joke, but the reality is we need manpower. Yeah. That's the reality, that we need manpower. Menachem Bambach is here. We're talking about these issues, which are so pressing, and which, of course, I have no right to voice my opinion because I live on this side of the world, but you certainly have a right to voice your opinion and to work with the goals that you have in mind. First of all, I assume you know Tzvi Klibanow. You don't know Tzvi. I believe he's the founder of Nachal Haredi. Interesting. So you're separate from the whole Nachal Haredi initiative. Am I right about that?
Yeah, it's a different initiative.
Tell me the differences.
No, I'm just coming for a while. I just understood right. we need to do everything, and if we're not going to put
all... When you say religious units, are you referring to Nachal, or are there other ones?
It could be a part of Nachal, absolutely, right. Yeah.
Got it.
We don't need to start militias right.
in the army. I get, but I'm just wondering if there are multiple avenues of
I will tell you, because of my experience, you can influence the army much more if you're outside, not right. inside. Inside, it's very tough.
Right, but
there's no space inside.
We also know the dangers of the outside and the inside.
if you come as someone that you change, you make some shifts in the community, and you have the right connections, you can influence them much more.
No, that I get, believe me. And I would assume that someone like him and Nachal in general is having an easier time than they used to. When they first started, the reaction among Torah giants was
crazy.
It was awful.
Absolutely.
And he withstood a tremendous... And he, by the way, looks more like a chassid than you do. And I'm not even sure he's a chassid. But he withstood a tremendous amount of criticism and attacks.
You seem like, yeah, but I'm going Shabbos with a shrimal.
Is that true?
Yeah, exactly. So...
In Beitar. So there's a chassidish minion in Beitar.
I have my own shul. Berditchev shul.
Seriously?
Yeah. And you know what? I can share with you. I'm the first shul... official shul in Bita Lit that I by myself made the Mishaberach Lecha Leitzal. And in the beginning was some people in the shul, they went out, and now when I'm saying Mishaberach, you can come and see it by your own eyes. 30 people are getting up quietly, standing up, and just you feel that the temperature of the shul.
Wow.
Yeah.
Much more effective.
We need to lead. We need to, you know, if you hesitate all the time, you're going to go back and back and back. You have to understand we have a mission and to be, you know, to going through and not hesitating to with courage. We need that's exactly the best way
to change
the community.
So people have to stop worrying about Shidduchim.
Yes. I think it's not Jewish. Right. If you believe in God, trust Him.
Right.
He's going to do the best for you, Chandra.
And it's more Jewish to be self-sustaining.
You know the test trimal?
The test trimal?
There's a test trimal.
Like T-E-S-T, test?
Yeah, test.
Bechina?
Yeah.
What's a test trimal?
Test trimal is...
I'm getting an education here today.
test trimal, let's say your brother in a different city right. invite you for Shabbat and you forget your trimal at home. Right. Are you going to the shul or not?
Seriously?
Yeah, it's a question.
There are people who would not go...
90%
would not dominate
the minion.
Because they forgot their struggle.
Yeah, because what people are going to say, and this is the, you know, the oldest kinds of... So that means the culture wins the religious.
You're in the 10%.
I will go with absolutely. Yeah.
And for that reason
I'm
alone,
I think in some ways I'm more religious.
Well, you don't have to convince me of that, but I hear what you're saying, believe me.
No, you serving, you know, all those kinds of things and about are you what people are going to say. Yeah. And how you look like and what you're talking about and which I think it makes the religious very uncomfortable.
It's how many, how many siblings do you have?
9.
So you're two. You're the second in a. Are the 9 together or they're 10 together?
9.
9 total of 9. Anybody following your lead or not? No. Interesting.
No. Yeah, but we have Baruch Hashem, a lot of friends and relationship in communities, right. And we are growing very, very fast. And it's about the resilience of Am Yisrael.
If I come to your shul and forget my shtreimel, I shouldn't worry. I should not worry.
It's very nice shul because
you'll take good care of me. You won't make me feel like an outsider.
Yeah, I make a gemach.
Can I wear a tie? Can I wear a tie? Or that would be unacceptable.
Absolutely, no. It's a shul that it's a can everybody feels accept. It's Baditchev, you know, Rabbi Levitzur Baditchev. He loved Israel so much, and I'm Israel, and always see with his best eyes about everything, and explain everything about the goods that happens in each human being. So this is exactly a kind of a shul that everybody feels very comfortable, and you don't need to pay any customs to become a part of the community.
Right, you
know. And we have more than 100 people in the shul, and it's in the center of Beitar, and we have many Hasidim, Lithuanian, Sephardim, everyone. It's like a normal place. I think God loves those kinds of shul. So if you want your tefillot to be accepted, come to Baditchev.
Yeah. Hey, we know that Tefillah B'Tzibur is more effective for a reason. And I would imagine that unified Tefillah B'Tzibur, when you feel a real kinship to those you're davening with, is even more effective. And by the way, I think, based on what I've seen from the Rav's Machzor, even the Briskers would agree with that. And they weren't always the biggest proponents that you have to daven with a minyan. So imagine that. Menachem Bambach is here. So just to be clear, you described the school you went to as a youngster. High school also, or you were already high school, like in some base medrash in Meir Sharim, or you know, once you were post bar mitzvah, where were you?
So I was in Vizhnitz. I learned in Vizhnitz, and the age of 17 and a half, 18, I felt I need to study Gemara. It's a time to start learning really. In the Hasidic schools,
went to the Mir?
Yeah, then that's
the Hasidic schools are not as strong in Talmud as the Mir would be.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
And you know, in the Hasidic community, you're not really focused about studying deep learning. It's a mostly about, yeah, you know, I have a great respect. I don't want to do the demonstrate.
Some of the critics may say Tyrus.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's about Tyrus. Which
yeah,
is,
it's about it's when the rabbi is going to come to the tish and right, when he's going out and what we have to do and what we know, which new kaftan the rabbi has.
Right.
It's a lot of emptiness in some way. But there is at the same time, we have, yeah, I'm so blessed that I know the Yeshes Moshe, the previous Vision Tzur Rebbe. I had great relationship. He gave me a sense and feeling, a deep feeling of Shabbos. All my students knows about my Rebbe and what he gave me in life. But at the same time, I didn't get in a different areas. So that's why Rebbe Aaron Lichtenstein was one of my greatest characters in life. I think I was the first Haredi in his Levaya, the only one Haredi in his Levaya.
It was just his yard site.
Yeah, exactly. I'm writing it here about him. I met him. I had relationship with Rabbi Lichtenstein in the last few years. We asked him to come to speak to a leadership group in Yeshiva University. So still I have the old speech. I didn't publish it.
Did anybody understand it? We used to joke here that whenever we read Rav Aaron's articles, we needed a dictionary next to us. You know?
Yeah, it was very special.
You must know Rav Rimon, I assume.
Yeah, sure. We are friends.
Wow.
Yeah, sure. So he is one of my characters. Is like he built my Torah floor. I mean,
in the foundation.
Foundation.
And so, how many years in the Mir?
So I was almost 2 years in Mir.
Plus Hebrew University and formal degrees. And then at what age do you decide? You had to do basic training at some point if you actually entered the army, right, or not?
Yeah. So when I was blessed, since I remember myself, I knew I'm going to be an educator. This is exactly what my dream was. So I get a counselor for Russian immigrants, and in the beginning, right after, and then came to me a young child. His name was Vadim, and said, Menachem, can you do me a favor? I need to do some homework in English. And I didn't know. So I said, it was very, you see my embarrassment. So I said, oh, I know English is quite hard. Can you help me with math? And I didn't know. And it was a moment I understood I need to take myself seriously.
You went for courses?
Sure. Otherwise, I cannot get any degree.
I'm so shocked you speak English as well as you do.
Yeah. Thank you. So this is my journey, and I start, when I start the first Mechina in Hebrew University, Mechina for Haredim.
Right.
It's a pre-academic program for Haredim, and I was sure this is going to help more Haredim to be integrated in Israeli society via the academy system. And I share many times this story, but it's a very touching story, because some of the guys who came to the Mechina, he graduated from Ponovich.
Wow.
Ponovich, it's right. Like the Harvard. It's very, but it's very right. Special. He knows to deal with the Talmud the best.
Right.
He was
very
amazing.
High level of study.
If you ask me, he was genius. He was very special. He was, after his marriage, he had already a child. And he told me, I don't need the whole year to close all the gaps. Give me just 3 months, because right. I graduated from Ponovich. I have the capability,
right.
And the skills. So, and after 3 months, he came and he cried and said, my parents, they sold me so many stories about if you graduate, you know how to deal with the Talmud, in one day you can resolve all the equations, but it doesn't work. And he wanted to become a physician, and he said, now I'm going to be a cashier. It's terrible, because I can't close those gaps. English is a new language. Math is a new language. And it's impossible. I was sure it's going to be easy for me. And he was so frustrated. And this was a moment that I decided I'm going to change the education system.
By letting elementary school children close the gap then.
Exactly. This is what's going to really help to generate a new generation.
Wow, what a...
Yeah.
What a lesson you're teaching us about the basics. We send our kids to good schools, thank God. That costs a lot of money. I'm sure you're familiar with what goes on here. But boy, is it a worthy investment. Boy,
absolutely.
Is it a worthy investment. Unbelievable. Menachem Bambach, how is your network supported? Does the government help you with money for the schools? Do you come here and to other places asking people? Tell us honestly, because I'm sure people listening now would love to know how to help you out.
I'm so blessed because 80% for our income comes from the government.
Nice.
And with the tuition, the parents pays for their children. Still, we need to raise about 20% from the whole budget because the government, they don't know how to build new schools.
Right.
There is a demand. It's not just about you have to be expertise in the community and how to create those realities, but we have very special project. I always saying for all the investors, people who wants to be a part of Netzach, it's not an ongoing investment. Once you put your money in a school, after 3-4 years, it becomes fully covered.
Right,
it's amazing.
By the government.
Yeah. So we need it just to start schools.
They're not just ready to help you actually build a new school.
Exactly. Yeah, and even I have some fights, because in the beginning, not all the time, and not in every place you have the full tech. And the all enough kids to get support or finance the support for those kids.
Right.
So it takes time. But yes, we are working with the reason why I'm in America. I'm just coming 3-4 times a year to meet partners, to meet investors. And this is the best way, the Choma Migdal, since when the country was built, right? Choma, I don't know how you translate Choma Migdal. But in every city, in every place, you just put a migdal to say we are this is our land.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. town square, maybe?
Something.
I don't know. Sure.
I'm the modern Choma Migdal.
Right.
I feel that in every place you have, and you know what? I'm not an agent of change. I'm the agent to preserve the community. If you ask me, I love the Haredi community. I think there were great things inside the community. I don't want to lose the great things.
But the only way to preserve it.
Yeah, the only way to preserve the community is just to change, because stagnation is something that it's terrible for a community.
Yeah, what can I tell you? You're 100% right. So is there a practical way for people to help out, or you want to give out information, or...
Everybody.
Is there a Netzach website?
Yeah, there's a Netzach website, Netzach Israel, Chinuch Vahakshara, Education Network. People knows about us, and it's easy to get, and people wants to be involved in many ways. I really invite you to be a part, because this is exactly what Israel needs, mainly in those days.
Well, I'll tell you right now that after today's conversation, I am going to have your contact information, so anybody... And I'm so glad we met. And anybody out there who would like to be in touch.
You know the differentiation between optimism and hope? It's Rabbi Zaks once said, I love it very much. Optimism is a passive way just to weigh the things that's going to happen. And hope, you create it up. You are active. And this is exactly what we need to do.
Any other historic scholars you'd like to quote this morning? I mean, you're dropping names here. You're very impressive.
I had great relationship with Rabbi Zaks. Awesome. Yeah, I even get from him a hug. In his wife, Elaine, she said, I testify, it's a really rare hug.
It's a rare to get a hug. He was something.
Yeah.
All right, Menachem Bambach, if you want information, folks, be in touch with me. Are you spending, how long are you here?
I'm going to stay for more a week.
In this area, New York,
In New York.
The reason I ask is because I would assume after this conversation, there are going to be shuls and others that are going to want to bring
you. Yeah, Shabbos, I'm going to stay in Riverdale. Nice. Rabbi Benny Krause.
Sure.
Yeah, we are friends, S.A.R., so he invite me to be there for Shabbat. I'm going to make a tish Friday night.
Great. With your Strymel.
With my Strymel.
I got to spend the Shabbos with you. Maybe in Meir Shalim. We'll go back to the old country.
I can't go to Meir Shalim anymore. You know Micha Goodman.
I know the name, yeah.
Micha Goodman.
Yeah.
He's very famous writer. And for some years ago, he said, we are very, very, very close friends. He write many books. So one day he said, Menachem, I have a friend who's going to Sydney for 1 year business, and I want to make a bye party, so I'm not going to a bar to bring some beer. Let's do something anthropological. Right. And I said, let's do something in Meir Shalim. You know every corner, you know the people, you know everything. So and I arranged for a special tour, but by then someone recognized my face and started screaming my name. And 150 boys was a lynch. If Micha with his friends was not there, I'm not sure if I was... And since then, I can't, the police, they don't let me to go in. So since then, it's about 7 years. I'm a troublemaker. 7 years. But.
So the only thing that keeps you going is hope and optimism. That's what keeps you going.
Exactly. Hope.
Because you can have a much different attitude.
You know, when you see a eyes, the glimpse, the.
Glare? A glimpse of an eye, or.
You see the eyes of your children, right. Of your students. Right. It's thousand times more than anything else.
It takes care of all the bad stuff.
Absolutely. I had demonstration against Mayaz in the beginning. It was a lot of propaganda. You know, for 1 year ago, it was in Beit Shemesh. I see there was a traffic. I didn't know what happened. And I asked some of the people, what's going on here? I said, don't ask, there is now demonstration against Bombach.
Anyway, you were in the car.
And I'm the guy, I didn't realize it. So I took a reverse.
Can I walk out of this building, or are there going to be people on the street who are here against you? I need to know.
No. I'm not so
against you. You cannot. Security?
I'm telling you, we raise a lot of empathy in the community. No, people love very much. If someone officially and publicly, and someone... They just sing, waiting how it's going to develop those system, and to make sure that those kids are staying in the community.
Right. So I guess the lesson is that, especially with the crossover of the Haredi world into Israeli society and into the army, there's a lot to be proud of, a lot of positive, And those of us who are sometimes cynical about it, we must realize that tremendous progress is being made.
Exactly.
Simple as that.
Exactly.
You'll speak about this in Riverdale at the
table? Yeah.
Because there are going to be people curious
yeah,
about
it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, people that don't know about...
If someone raises opposition to the Haredim, then tell them that Nachum Segal said that because you live 6,000 miles away from Israel, you're not allowed to say anything. Okay, you can use me as your fall guy.
I will use it.
Menachem, we got to meet in Israel. We must meet in Israel.
I would like and I'm come so visiting glad. the schools.
Bezrat Hashem.
I want to tell you, it was a professor. He passed away in Yibin University. Amiram Gonen was a very famous professor. And he passed away for 3-4 years ago. I was very close to him because he was very involved in changing and understanding more the Haredi community. And the last year before he passed away, he came to the school and said, Menachem, I'm telling you, I'm very close to die. I'm here just to feel before I'm going to die the hope what you're creating for Israel. And this is going to happen here.
Was he Dati or not?
No, completely secular. Wow. And he said, when I'm speaking to you children, I feel I speak to my own boy. And this is very touching.
There's more that unites us than divides us.
Exactly.
Kol hakavod, Menachem. A real pleasure. Tada rabah. And our hearts are with the parents and families of those who fell yesterday. And of course, the price of this war is gargantuan, unfortunately. But there is a lot of there are some silver linings to what's happened over the last few months, and there's a lot of hope and optimism. Tada rabah lecha.
Thank you, Nachum. It was great meeting you,
Menachem Bambach. That we were told that it would be amazing to sit with him face to face, and whoever told us that was 100% right. More coming up. It's Thursday at JM in the AM.